Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
It's another Dean and John special. Just the two of us riffing about a topic. Today, we are going to talk about effective sales presentations. This is kind of a passion project of sorts for me.
Right. Okay.
Because I've worked sales in the past, and we'll talk a little bit more about that.
Yep.
And it's something that I've seen very bad presentations. I've seen good presentations. I've learned some interesting methodologies mm-hmm. for presentations. Mm-hmm. So we want to talk about that with you and tell you a little bit about, you know, what you should be thinking about. What are the cliches of presentations? What are some things you should do, shouldn't do? And then I'll talk a little bit about a presentation technique that I learned that I think is useful and effective in a lot of different situations. So with that said, it is time for us to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect Podcast. It's time to get connected.
All right, as I mentioned, our topic today, sales presentations. Dean?
Yep.
What's your experience in sales? Did you have to do a lot of presentations?
Oh my gosh, what's my experience in sales? Well, if I could go back a little bit for you, John. So coming out of college, I cut my teeth selling copiers for what was then Scott Business Systems, what turned into Icon Office Solutions. And it was a great way to learn selling because when I went to school, didn't learn how to sell
right,
at all.
Right.
So like most people, I was looking for, you know, some way to get experience along the way. And the interesting thing about copier sales is that we went up against some true, I will call like trench hardened sales guys and gals in the sales force against Xerox. So Xerox was like, you know, this behemoth for the 70s, 80s. Into the 90s. I mean, if you are a sales rep for Xerox and you had any tenure, you could sell in a classical sense. And I think we're going to get into that today, what the classical sense of selling would be, always be closing and stuff like that. So we would compete against those guys. That's who I would, you know, I would compete against. So I was there for a couple years. And then my next career move was to be, I ended up becoming the director of sales and marketing for a reseller. And so I wore kind of both hats. So I have been selling. I have, I don't know, whatever. Well, yeah, like over 15 years of sales experience.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay. So I got a little bit, not long in the tooth, but I got some experience.
Right,
I know
what
I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And what about you?
So my first real job, if you want to call it that, was in retail. So that's not like
retail sales.
Yeah, it was a bookstore.
Okay.
A bookstore. So like nothing that I had to go out of my way to sell stuff there. Mm-hmm. Then I transitioned over to higher ed publications, higher ed textbooks. Mm-hmm. So that was a sales gig. I moved through different sales stages there, was, you know, an actual foot on the ground kind of sales. It was actually inside sales, but I did get to go out and travel sometimes. And then I did sales manager for a while. My last gig before coming to Blue Star was with a food service equipment supplier. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of presentation-y stuff that went on there. We were, again, inside sales. I traveled maybe a little bit more there, so you got to get in front of people. But there was a heavy presentation aspect, and it's where I learned this kind of technique that we're going to talk about later. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I had to do my fair share of presentations. Everything from, you know, endless PowerPoints to product demonstrations, you know, and it's not my favorite thing in the world to do. There's a reason why I'm in marketing now, and there's a reason why I'm sitting behind a mic. But I do feel like between the two of us, we have a lot of experience in it, and I think we have a lot of insight. And let's be honest, sales and marketing do go hand in hand.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a great presentation usually has a marketing aspect to it, don't you think?
No doubt about it. And I think that there are people that are good at selling and there are people that are good at presenting.
Yep.
Sometimes it's hard to get somebody who can do both. And so from a presentation standpoint, man, I've been involved in a lot of them as well.
Yeah.
I've been involved in some presentations for, you know, high dollar deals that we're trying to go down to very small presentations, you know, training and stuff like that. So, between the two of us, it sounds like we're bringing a lot of experience to the table here.
Yeah.
Who
so,
knew?
Well, again, as with our last podcast, where it was just us, we're going to solve the world's problems.
I love it.
By the time we're done with this, you're going to have every sales presentation. You're going to get it exactly right. You're going to sell everything you want to. You're going to make all your goals.
And I think what's important here as we dive into it is that sales has changed. Presentations have changed. Society has changed. So, you know, when I think back about, you know, early in my career and the type of sales techniques that I was taught, mm-hmm. and of course the tools that we had were completely different than what we have available today. I mean, I didn't even have a laptop. Now I'm going back a little bit, but I actually got a laptop right before I left the first job. But anyway, so the tools are different. The techniques were different. Just a different world, if you will. But there's a lot that can be said about good presentations at the end of the road.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I was thinking of when I was debating this topic and thinking about how I wanted to structure this mm-hmm. is, first of all, like the way people approach getting to presentations, I think can be a little bit flawed. Mm. So, you know, I wrote down like on our notes here, can I have a half hour of your time?
No,
like how many times have you received an email mm-hmm. or a, you know, random phone call from someone that said, hey, can I get a half hour of your time? I want to talk to you about X, Y, Z mm-hmm. and how my product can do this and can mm-hmm. do that and do this, where they're trying to basically sell you and present to you mm-hmm. just while they're trying to literally ask for the opportunity to do a presentation. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's something that automatically turns you off right there. Mm-hmm. Like when someone comes and asks for you, your time, it's hard enough to ask for people's time as it is. But if you're right out of the gate asking for half an hour, that's a little problematic, I think. Mm-hmm. So kind of the way I want to think of this, I want to break this up in a few stages. One, I want to talk a little bit about the cliches of presentations. Mm-hmm. And we were talking just before we got on here, you know, when I was thinking about this, I started thinking about some of the cliched versions of sales that you've seen like in TV and film. And one of the first instances that came to mind was the movie Glengarry Glen Ross, mm-hmm. which has that infamous scene mm-hmm. with Alec Baldwin. I tell us to throw in a snippet of it, but it's very profane and we're a clean
yeah, we
podcast.
Can't do that. Yeah. Right.
But it is a worthwhile scene. If you don't mind a little, you know, a little profanity, yeah. It is a great scene to watch. If you've
but
ever
it is
seen
classic.
Movie.
It is classic.
Exactly. Like the whole premise of it is he walks into this sales office where there's these four guys who yep. are not getting the job.
Not executing, selling, not getting it.
Right. They're right. selling property. They're not getting it done. They squander the leads, or at least mm-hmm. that's what the boss's perception is and the higher-up's perception is. So he comes in and gives them this huge speech, and he tells them, you know, always be closing. Coffee's for closers. You mm-hmm. know, there's a lot of other stuff that he says, you know, right. just adamantly drilling into them like, you know, your life should be built around selling and closing, and you're a worthless human being and a piece of trash if you don't. You know, and I think you see that replicated quite often. And to this day, I feel like that particular scene is still held up as like, this is an icon of sales and how sales should be. But as you just mentioned, sales has changed a lot over the years. And I don't mm-hmm. think, while that method still exists and mm-hmm. it is still one that some people hold near and dear to themselves, mm-hmm. I don't know that it's the most effective way of sales these days. I think there's a lot more nuance to it than just battering someone into buying something and
right.
you know,
persuasion, the act of persuading,
yeah, just, exactly,
you know, arm twisting them until they buy. And I think that's part of what we're getting into here today, because I've always been of the opinion that the close, and this isn't a sales podcast, so and maybe right. we'll do that, you know, at a different time, but the close is actually should be the easiest thing.
Yep.
You shouldn't have to arm wrestle somebody into buying yours. Now, I have been in situations where it is a fast deal and things are moving very quickly, and aggressive sales reps, you know, that use some of these old techniques sometimes can win the day because they're very persuasive type people. But that is more of a rarity, I think, especially in today's world where the consumer, if you will, and that can be a business-to-business consumer, is coming to the meeting so well educated. There's Google, there's online, there is so much information out there that an individual or an entity can come into the sales process already knowing mm-hmm. that, you know, that a lot of that is now it's about, you know, doing a proper presentation and stuff like that.
Right. You know, and I think also, and this is something I think we'll dive a little further into as well, there is a distinct difference between selling a product versus selling yourself or your company. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think modern sales and modern presentations tend to revolve a lot about selling you and your company and why you should be the person that they work with. Because mm-hmm. let's be honest, there's not a lot of unique products anymore. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of products that exist that only you have and only you can sell.
So
you may literally be, and, you know, and speaking to our VARs that listen to this podcast, you may literally be selling the same products as 50 other VARs in your area trying to go after the same customer.
Yep.
So instead of maybe selling the product, it might be a lot about selling who you are, what you understand about that company, why they should be working with you and your company and buying those products from you rather than someone else. And price isn't always going to be the factor.
Right.
Like sometimes it is.
Yep.
But I'd say more often than not, price is not the selling point. If someone, if you are, you know, priced 10% higher than your competitor, but your customer thinks that they're going to get a better experience and you understand them better, they're probably going to be more inclined to go for you, you know, unless the bottom line is the only thing that matters to them.
Thus, the value-added reseller.
Exactly.
Right? The value add you're bringing to the table. But we're not here to talk about that. We're talking about sales presentation.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
So I want to start off by, let's talk about some of the things that don't work for presentations.
Yep.
And I'm going to kind of rattle these off and then we'll, you know, dive into them a little bit further.
Okay.
So one of the things that I've been taught for a long time, was always taught in, you know, presentations and in sales in general, is this concept called either feature dumping, show up and throw up. There's other ways you can you can phrase it. But the idea that you walk into a presentation or to a sales situation and try to tell everything there is to know about your product, regardless of any knowledge of whether your customer needs all those features or not. The way I like to think of it is, you go to a car lot, for instance, and you walk in and a car salesman comes up to you and says, you know, hey, you're looking for a new car? Like, yeah, I am. Well, hey, come over here. I've got the new 2020 Ford F-150. It's, you know, got this kind of motor in it. It's got all these bells and whistles. You can, you know, it's got a, you can haul up to, you know, 30,000 pounds or whatever of trailer or whatever you need. You know, it's got all this, you know, it's got a rack on the top for, you know, your equipment and stuff. And you're thinking, I came here for a sports car. I don't
total
haul
disconnect.
Stuff around. Yeah.
Right,
like
yeah, yeah.
I'm just a dude who wants a nice car to drive
yeah,
around.
Yeah, that's
town.
Nice and all, but
and they never bothered to ask you about that. They were, you know, or even if they did, they only asked you, what are you looking for? And you say, well, a sports car. And they just showed you the flashiest, coolest one on the lot. Again, nothing about who you are. So there's that. And that leads into not having insight into your customer, not understanding who your customer is. I feel like that's always a problem in a lot of presentations and sales. Not asking a lot of questions. And death by PowerPoint, or death by presentation in general, which, you know, is the sense of having a presentation where you're just asking somebody to watch a bunch of slides or watch you talk about a product for half an hour without much input or discussion going on. So what do you think about those?
God,
any other no-nos that you'd
these.
Add?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I read this before the podcast, and this is dead on. What doesn't work? Feature dumping. You cannot walk into a presentation. Let me put it this way. If you walk into a presentation and you take over the room and you're doing nothing but send, you know, showing your features of whatever your product is, guaranteed you have lost the audience and they are doing nothing but lip service to get you out of the room as fast as they possibly can. Feature dumping does not work. And the note that I made to myself as you were talking, John, and I firmly believe in this, it takes a little bit of homework. Look, if you've worked really hard to get a presentation and you actually get somebody to give you time, whether that's in person or whether that's virtual, you know, online today, do a little bit of homework. Do the due diligence. That's what great salespeople do, is that they'll try to connect the dots. They'll learn a little bit about the customer that they're walking into. And your point, though, is really valid, too, because I think about a lot of our resellers. Maybe they're a POS reseller, and that's what they've been doing all day long. You know, right. I sell this. It's a point-of-sale system. So my presentation to the next restaurant or the next retail establishment is pretty much going to be the same, because this is what I do. This is my feature and benefits. Don't do
that.
And
you've got all that memorized. You're an expert in those
features.
You're
an expert on it, but don't do that.
Right.
You know, you still, everybody is unique. Everybody feels like they're unique. You got to treat them as unique. So even though you sold it to this POS system to XYZ restaurant, 1-2-3 restaurant's going to be different,
right?
Even if it's a different menu, if it's a different whatever it is, figure out what their differentiation is and bring that into your presentation. You know, so feature dumping does not work. But that does speak to your second point of getting insight into the customer, right? You want to understand at least some of their pain points. And if you can't, you can only learn so much online. There's only so much research you can do. So I was always a fan, and still to this day, I'm a fan of a sales rep who will genuinely start the conversation about what am I looking for?
Right.
And so I can frame this presentation around the needs of the customer,
right?
You got to have that customer insight. And again, if you can only find so much before you walk in the door, but I always made a point of it to say, hey, look, I've got this presentation. I'm good to go here, and that's what we're going to do today. But I want to hear from you first. And then cue up some questions so that you could get that insight. That's brilliant. You got to ask the questions, right? You got to be insightful while you're having that dialogue along the way. Before I even started presenting anything, the first 10, 15 minutes, I'm sitting back, I'm listening, right?
Right.
What is the old phrase? God gave you two ears and one mouth, kind of a thing. Use them appropriately.
Should be listening more than you talk.
Right? I mean, you really need to. Even if you have your presentation, you think it's all buttoned up, you know exactly what you're going to say, doesn't matter. Walk into the room, be open, ask questions, because the presentation can go in a completely different direction than what you thought you were going to do.
Yep.
And I can tell you this, through the dialogue that you're having, you will have a much more meaningful presentation now addressing whatever was brought up in the room.
Yep.
You know, oh, I know you're in here to talk digital signage, but I actually need a new point of sale, or the inverse. I know you're here to sell me point of sale, but I actually got this digital signage, or this networking issue, or this video camera issue, or something like that. You know, you got to be flexible along the way. PowerPoint, do not just walk through your slides, right? Now you need to tailor the story that you're telling, your presentation, to what you just learned along the way. That is an awesome list of what not to do.
Well, because it is all the things that bug me. It was all the things that I was taught not to do.
Right.
It was all the things that if I was presented to or sat in a presentation that made me just, you know, grate my teeth and clench my fists together and be like, why are we doing it this way? Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't need to be this way. And, you know, and I don't know about you, but in my various sales roles, I went through a lot of different sales trainings as well. Like, it felt like every company I ever worked for always felt like every year they were often bringing, this is especially when I was in the publishing side, like it always felt like every year we brought in a different new type of selling or a new, you know, training we had to go to, or someone to come in
a
and
new
coach
mousetrap.
Right, exactly.
Right? This person's got it now.
Exactly. Right. And they almost always said very similar things. It was almost always the same thing. Or sometimes they blatantly contradicted one another. Mm. And most of them I just like, all right, I'll take that away from it as useful. But but I feel like there was a lot of them that never really got it right and never really, you know, either they were all kind of looking at the same place from different angles, or they were contradicting each other entirely. So you get to the point where you're like, well, how am I supposed to do this? Like, am I supposed to be in here badgering away, or am I supposed to just lay back and, you know, let it come to me? Am I supposed to be semi-aggressive? Like, where do you draw the line?
Yep.
And I don't feel like, you know, I feel like a lot of times there's a lot of mixed messages around that, which is why probably salespeople don't quite know what to do sometimes.
It's got to be confusing. And it's got to be, I haven't taken a sales class or whatever in years. I know exactly what you're talking about, though, the type of training that was done back in the day, if you will, and even what it might look like today. But I can tell you is the experience that I've had, having sat through, I don't know, hundreds, thousands of presentations that I've had to give. I can tell you that sometimes you're forced into a feature dump sometimes, because you'll walk into a room and you're set up for the presentation and the people in the room are not engaging, you know, or maybe they're not the decision maker, they're an influencer. And so they're only somewhat committed to whatever this is, the project or whatever. And so sometimes you have to go, okay, this is just a typical presentation. I got to check the box here. I got to convey to you all the things that our company does really well and stuff like that. But man, even that is so few and far between. You got to make some connection and make that presentation sing a little bit more. I really feel like, and I don't know if this was one of the points you were going to make, a presentation, a good presentation, can absolutely set the stage for your differentiation.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You are trying to differentiate yourself from everybody else out there, whether you might have the same widget, but the presentation, again, if you actually have that capability to walk in or have that meeting with somebody, now's the chance for you to really start differentiating yourself. Yeah.
Big time. Yeah. You know, and you kind of mentioned the different sales trainings. Now there's some stuff you will come across. And it's funny because as you were talking about that, you were picking up your pen and it made me think of that classic maneuver.
Right? Yeah.
Sell me this pen. Like, Wolf of Wall Street references that. That's like, I think, the very end of the movie they reference that. Another movie that's filled with profanity. Like, apparently just sales is all about profanity. That's what they learn from it. So,
but two classics.
Yeah, but again, that was another film that was all about this idea of like sales being a trick. Like, how do you con someone into buying something and rather than actually being consultative and caring and listening or whatever? And that whole idea of sell me a pen is one of those things. I'm like, if that's your approach to starting how to do sales training, you're already off the mark because it's just not that simple. Like, it's not that simple to ask somebody to sell you a pen when they know nothing about who you are or why you might want to. Do you even want a pen? You know? So let's shift then and talk about the stuff that does work. And I think we've hit on a lot of that already in talking about the things that don't.
Mm-hmm.
So the list that I came up with here is relevant features. Mm-hmm. So if you are going to talk about features of a product, mm-hmm. it damn well better be the features that are important to that customer and to their situation.
Mm-hmm.
You may have the world's greatest POS system that can literally do everything front and back of the house, everything that's needed. But if all they needed is, you know, some basic front of the house features just to make sure that they can get customers in and out quickly, scan their barcodes, you know, ring them up, take cashless payments or something like that. If that's the only stuff they wanted, that should be the only stuff you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you mentioned the other stuff is, hey, there's other great features. We can get into those later, but I want to focus on the stuff that's important to you right now.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing who your customers are. Know your customers, and you mentioned this, know your decision makers.
Mm-hmm.
Know if you are going into a presentation, are you talking to the person who's going to decide to give you access to a decision maker, maybe punt you up the line to the mm-hmm. person who actually will mm-hmm. sign off on your product, or are you talking to the person who is going to make that decision? Because that can be also two different types of presentations. Mm-hmm. Maybe you don't even need to be presenting to the person that's not the decision maker.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to stop you right
sure.
there because I've got a use case on just those two. You know, what does work in a presentation? Couldn't agree more. Relevant features, right? Sometimes that takes a little bit of homework.
Right.
And knowing your customer and who the decision makers are. So back in a previous life before Blue Star here, I worked for, again, a reseller. We started getting into digital signage. One of the big presentations that we had the capability to do was actually locally here at the Duke Energy Center.
Mm.
They had put out an RFP to put in digital signage system for the Duke Energy Center, which is our convention center here in Cincinnati. And at the time, very few convention centers had ever done it. So we were able, of course, we knew the features that they were looking for from the RFP, right? So, and that's pretty traditional in a lot of sales. You know, salespeople will look at the RFP, and they're checking the box. Yep, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. But we were able to get what I'll call a pre-presentation conference with them, or a call with them, so that we could dig a little bit deeper into some of the things that they were doing or looking to do from a feature set. And believe it or not, one of the features they were looking for was RS-232 connection between the displays and the back of house so that they could control in back of house. That wasn't in the RFP.
Gotcha.
So, and one of the decision makers was an engineer. He was definitely... he didn't have the final, he's what you would call an influencer,
heavy influencer,
though, because part of whatever the engineer said, this we can deal with this system is going to get the go ahead.
Right.
So learning that little nugget, do you think I put that into the presentation?
Of course.
Oh, heck yeah. And I'm pretty sure it's a nugget that the competition didn't have. So to your point,
did you win the business?
We did. And it was the biggest.
Say if you didn't, I was going to say, don't listen to any of this.
I know, right? It was the biggest contract, biggest digital signage contract that we at the time had ever gotten. And that lasted for many, many years. But anyway.
That's awesome.
It was a huge deal. So, but just knowing, isn't that funny? Like just one little feature set. And of course, there were multiple things, other points that went into for Duke Energy making that center decision. But still, that was one that, man, I'm telling you, our presentation really sung because we could show that feature worked. Yeah.
Well, and that was my next bullet
point.
And
to the right person.
Yeah, exactly. Right? That was my next bullet point was do your diligence before the presentation.
Yep, got it.
Know who you need to be talking, not just know who you need to be talking to, but what do you need to be focused on? And as you mentioned, standard RFP may not have all the information that you need. It may have the good technical specs and you may know like, yeah, I can check all these boxes and bring this in and this is what they said they were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
May not actually be what they need if you didn't actually bother talking to anybody ahead of time.
I mean, who's to say that you couldn't send, you know, the prospect an email prior to the presentation saying, hey, by the way, these are high level. This is what I'm going to be covering in my presentation. I respect your time.
Right.
You know, what in here would you like me to focus in on? I mean, I think some people would react kindly to that. I know I would.
Right.
You know, if I'm looking at a list of 8 bullet points that this person has in their presentation, dude, I'm only interested in points number 2 and 4. And really, I want to understand points 2 and 4 really, really well.
Right.
I would give them that feedback. And as a sales rep, I'd really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, here's my features, but I'm going to focus in on these on number 2 and 4 for you. So, you know, in order to do that due diligence, you can't be afraid sometimes to ask those questions.
Not at all.
Right? Because what you're trying to do is craft the right presentation that's going to make efficient use of everybody's time. Sorry.
No. This is exactly what we're doing this for. I want your
insight. Right.
So the other two points I got, keep it engaging.
Keep it engaging, yep.
Which, again, we've kind of alluded to this, like, you know, try to do more listening than talking. I know that's hard to do in a sales presentation. It's, you know, they're there to listen to you talk, essentially. But you should be engaging with them and asking questions and getting feedback, even if it's just a simple, like, yeah, you're on the right track, we can move on kind of thing. If you're not engaging with them and you're just going start to finish, sometimes you can see it. You can look at their faces and see, like, crap, I'm losing these people. Mm-hmm. Or you may be off in a completely different direction where they are mentally going, nah, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. And you didn't get that opportunity to course correct and shift your strategy if you needed to in that conversation. Mm-hmm. And then my last bullet point is, you know, this lends itself to the whole always be closing idea that, like, you still can be closing even if your presentation isn't meant to close somebody around the spot. But it's, you can either be asking for the business at the end of the conversation, or at the very least, set your next meeting or set your next expectations. And we're going to get into this a little bit more when I talk about the, you know, the methodology that I think is very helpful on this. Mm. But there's something to be said for, like, if you reach an end of a presentation and you're just kind of standing there and, like, what do you think? You know, you should expect to get very little. Or, like, oh, well, thanks, that was interesting, we'll be in touch or something, you know.
It's not professional.
Right. Instead, if you're asking, like, hey, you know, so I've outlined all of this for you, I think I have a good understanding of what you're trying to do here. You know, does this work for you? Can we get your business? You know, when can we get started on this project? Or maybe it's a, hey, you know, I realize there's going to be a lot to talk about on the back end. You guys are going to have a lot to decide. Let's schedule our next meeting and figure out when we're going to talk about this next. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the kind of stuff you're telling someone, like, I expect there to be movement after this, not just me walking out the door and hoping that you give me a call next week.
Yeah, and you would think that this would be, like, in the no-brainer category, but I'm telling you, I've sat through many, many, because it sounds like we both manage people in sales, right? So I have sat through many, many a presentation where the sales rep that I'm managing doesn't do a bad job on the presentation, you know, did it, homeworks, checking a lot of the boxes that we're saying here. And at the end, it's like radio silence. No, that's death. What are you doing? No, you got
it. It's the fear of rejection.
Yeah,
that's a big part
of
it.
I guess so.
If you ask for someone's business and they say no, I mean, well, let's be honest, that is literally the worst thing that can happen to you, but it's also, you're done, you know, like you've done your diligence.
Going down the path of, you know, asking for the close at the end of the presentation. I think that what people do appreciate is, one, being given a list of options of possible next steps, and then two, confirming what those next steps are.
Right.
You know, nobody likes leaving a meeting saying, well, I learned something, but I don't know what we're doing next. I mean, that is the absolute worst. So even if your presentation closes with something along the lines of, you know, an action item or, you know, can we schedule something so I can have a better understanding of how we can win this opportunity, something along the lines, be professional about it, because your audience is expecting some kind of professional and they'll like it. People like having some type of closure to this presentation, and we know what's happening next along the way.
Exactly. Yeah. Anything else you would add?
Going back to the keeping engagement, you know, one of the tricks that this is a pro tip, I guess, along the way. Well, one of the tips that I would use in a presentation is use cases. Mm-hmm. I think that people like to learn from what other people are doing that are similar to themselves.
Agreed.
So if you're a reseller that's in POS, you know, you probably have many of them that you could queue up. But I'll just liken back to, again, my experience back in digital signage. One of the bigger presentations that I had given was to Christiana Healthcare Services System. I'm sorry. They're throughout Maryland and huge medical system, hospitals, doctor's offices, the whole thing. And they were looking into digital signage in their weight room. Well, we had done a couple projects actually here locally through Children's Hospital and whatnot. And so I had some experience there. And in the presentation, you know, there were some points in time in the presentation, as you were talking about, where, you know, there's some ebbs and flows in the presentation, and sometimes people get tuned off a little bit, and all you have to do is interject some use cases. Hey, we did this over at the Cincinnati Children's Hospital. How do you think your audience would react to that? Or, you know, bring in some of those experiences. I used to love to leverage those because I think that genuinely you're getting good information from that. Number one, you're conveying, obviously, that you understand their world, but you're getting genuine feedback when you do use cases like that. Brings down those barriers of, you know, that people can be standoffish, and it ups your authenticity, which is awesome because that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to build a relationship with these people, and if they know that you kind of already understand their world, there's a lot to it, and it can help with the engagement during the presentation.
Yep,
I can any presentation that I've been involved in, if I am engaged, I feel better about it walking out of the room, right? If I'm just in one of these presentations where I'm sitting back and listening, dude, I don't know, 10 minutes later, if you ask me, what was that all? I don't know. What was that guy present?
I zoned out for like it 5 minutes there.
If I'm engaged along the way, or if they're showing me use cases of something really simple and they've done a little bit of homework behind it, I'm going to remember the presentation and probably so that I can go back to my team, maybe even a little excited about what I just learned. And hey, you know, I was just talking to this person about this and da 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 da.
Yep.
So much better. Much better.
Definitely.
So really good points on what does work. Keeping engagement absolutely works. Asking for the business or doing something professional at the end absolutely works. Really simple steps, right?
Yeah.
But you've got a methodology.
At my last gig, it was one of those jobs like that. It wasn't necessarily a fit for me and where I was in my particular career path at that time. Mm-hmm. But I did learn an incredibly valuable sales presentation method there. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things like we were debating when I was talking about this. I'm like, should I talk about it as it is? Is it proprietary? But I looked it up online and there's a company called Impax that actually teaches. In fact, I did go to a training for them up in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I think they're a relatively small company, but they do a lot around presentations and about, you know, how to find decision makers and how to guide your way to a great presentation. And honestly, this particular methodology can be used in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be just for a sales presentation, but it's most effective, I think, in a presentation where you are, again, trying to kind of sell yourself or your company and not necessarily about a very specific product. If you're, you know, if it's just a product, maybe you don't get this involved. Mm-hmm. But if you're trying to sell who you are as a company and trying to establish a relationship with a partner and why they should be working with you, I think this is a good way to approach
Which is something, which by the way, should be your goal.
Exactly.
Right?
It should, yeah. Because let's be honest, even if you're just selling them a product, mm-hmm. that's a future potential customer. Somebody mm-hmm. who buys something from you once is someone that could buy something from you for the next 30 years. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't know that. Like just because they came to you once and just said, hey, all I need is a barcode scanner.
Right.
That doesn't mean that they're not going to next year come to you and ask for a rollout of a massive digital signage project mm-hmm. for an arena or mm-hmm. something, you know, mm-hmm. that, you know, any customer that comes to you today for something simple and small could very easily be a customer that is with you for life and comes to you next year for the biggest project you've ever seen. And in a lot of what you do in that one sale and that one conversation could make an impact. So,
yeah.
You know,
100%.
Why not always be, maybe not closing, always be presenting, always be selling yourself, always be
absolutely,
you know, discovering what you need to know about them.
Yeah. So we're zooming in on the presentation,
yes.
right? So, we got a methodology right. for effective presentation.
Exactly. So it's called the TUFA method, which stands, TUFA. It's T-U-F-A. It stands for them, us, fit, action.
Them, us, fit, action.
Right. Got it. Now, the presumption before you've gotten to this point is that you have done what they call discovery, which is, you know, basically just having some in-depth calls with people mm-hmm. maybe within the company that aren't necessarily the key decision makers, but are people that may be a little more in tuned to, let's say they're the person whose job is going to be to go out and install a particular mm-hmm. product, or maybe they're the salesperson whose job it is to go out and be on the front line and talk about products to people. But the decision maker is going to decide whether they're going to sell your products or bring your products in or actually buy your products. Is the person that you're going to eventually need to talk to. So maybe you spend some time with them and learn a little bit about them and learn their pain points. Mm-hmm. So that by the time you get to a decision maker and maybe they help you introduce you to that decision maker, you're a little bit armed with like what's happening on the lower levels below that decision.
So this methodology presumes that you've done some of that.
Exactly. Now you could trot it out on any person, but I think it's most effective if you've already, again, done that diligence.
Yep.
You've talked to the right people. Yep. You understand that business, because that's where the first part, the them of this presentation, kicks in.
And I'll give a pro tip there if I can.
Go for it.
Are we creating like a new segment? Pro tips.
That's something for the soundboard right there. Right? Pro tips.
You know. Yeah, Marco, we need to work on that. We need a little sound there. But anyway, don't you dare hit the board. No, I'm just kidding. But what I would do from time to time, especially on larger projects that were going to be multifaceted, I would actually go to the facility. So I'll go back to the healthcare facility I was just talking about and some of the deals that we were involved in and some of the presentations that we had to give in front of healthcare boards and things like that. I would go to the facility. I would walk around. Where is this going to be used? I would try, not in an awkward way, but if I caught eye contact with a worker or something like that, or if somebody was looking at me like, hey, what are you doing here? Why are you looking at the walls so weird?
Right.
You know, I would say, well, we're giving a presentation on digital signage and this is what it could be used for. Do you think it would be helpful? And just have that little bit of dialogue. I love where you were just going with that. When you can come into a presentation with what I would call some trench knowledge, what's going on in the trenches and what people really think would be an effective use, and bring that up in the presentation. Hopefully this TUFA method uses that, because
it does.
That's powerful.
Because, and here's the thing about doing that too. It doesn't even have to be something you accredit to specific people. Like if you want to talk to someone and they want to kind of talk to you off the record a little bit about it, you can get that information from them that you can use for the presentation without attributing it to them. You can say, you don't necessarily have to go in and say, well, hey, I talked to your chief engineer,
right?
And they said that like your current digital signage is an absolute joke,
right?
And they are looking for something new. No, that person doesn't want you doing that to the top dog. Mm-hmm. But if instead you have those conversations and you go in armed with that knowledge and say, hey, I understand your current digital signage is not necessarily what you are hoping for or would expect. Sometimes it's glitchy, or maybe it doesn't have all the features that you expected out of that. That way, the person you're talking to knows, like, all right, they know what's happening here. Mm-hmm. I don't know who they talk to, but they know what's happening here. Mm-hmm. So that's the them part, where you talk about what you've learned and understand about their business, their needs, their current environment. You put all that out there on the table, and then, and this was always a key part of it, before you move on at all, you stop and ask the decision maker, because you should know who that person is in the room. There may be a bunch of other people, influencers. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a couple decision makers. But you ask at least that key decision maker, like, am I on the right track? Mm-hmm. Do I have an understanding? Validate. Do I understand your business and your needs? Mm-hmm. And ideally, you're doing this, they're going to say yes because you should have done your homework. Mm-hmm. But if for some reason they do say no, hey, then you stop right there. And you have a conversation about what they actually are thinking is going on. Mm-hmm. And maybe that means you literally walk out the door and come back and finish the presentation later. Or maybe it means you alter it on the fly. But that's a critical component, because if you go and spout everything you think you know about them and you're dead wrong, you've ruined the entire rest of your
presentation. Love the confirmation aspect of it, because I cannot tell you how many times I went through that. Tried to get validation that I'm on the right path in this presentation, and I understand your world, the them. You get the decision maker, and maybe they'll confirm it. Yep, everything you said is dead on. Oh, but also, I've got this in my mind.
Right,
that wouldn't have been unearthed. And now you realize that, what's really on the decision maker's mind is this.
Yep.
So to the committee who wrote the RFP, or the committee who's involved in the aggregate decision, okay, I got this part of the presentation, but the decision maker has all that plus this.
Exactly.
No other way you're going to unearth that than to ask and get that validation.
Exactly.
Brilliant.
So from there, assuming you do that
and
they give you that validation, say, yeah, you're on the right track. Mm-hmm. Then you can say, hey, oh, great, because the entire rest of this presentation is built on me being right about this. Mm-hmm. So let's move on. Mm-hmm. So then you talk about us, which is yourself, your company, your product, whatever it is that you're there to pitch. And this is where, again, you don't get into that feature dumping.
Mm-hmm.
You don't start wasting time telling them every little thing they need to know about you, when your company was founded, what the name of the president is, how many installations you've done. Unless that stuff's relevant, if they're making a decision based on who you are as an overall company, fine. Mm-hmm. But you talk about the stuff that's relevant to the them piece that you've just gone through.
Mm-hmm.
So I would literally look back at those, whatever slides or whatever you talked about in the them, like, hey, I understand this, this, and this about your business. It's good to keep it maybe to two or three key points. Your us should be about, hey, here's what you need to know about us. And those us statements should all in some way reflect on what your company can do related to those particular needs.
Got it. Got it.
So you get through that.
Well, I'm so glad earlier in this podcast, I talked about how I love to use use cases.
Yes, you're on
because,
it. No.
Because I think that that's a perfect way of kind of weaving the us
yep.
into the them. Right? Yep. This is what we have done in healthcare digital signage, by the way, Christiana Care. That's what we did. You know, we kind of weaved. This is what we did at the Holzer Clinic. This is what we did at Children's Hospital. And oh, man. Okay.
Yeah,
who knew I was doing the two?
You already were. That's just it. A lot of this is somewhat intuitive. It's just about giving yourself a structure so that when you are putting a presentation together, you are thinking about these steps.
Got it.
And when you're presenting it, you're still thinking about this as well. So you don't get yourself off track and start going off and rambling about something that doesn't have any real relevance here.
Okay.
So you get done with them, you get done with us. Well, then the next step is fit, which is basically where you're putting this all together and you're telling them, all right, based on what I understand about you, based on what I've just told you about us, here's where you and I working together is going to fix your problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stuff that I just told you that we can do is going to fix this need. The other thing I told you that we're great at is going to help you out with this need. So you're breaking that down and making it as clear as it can possibly be. Mm-hmm. This is where you and me working together is a great fit.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, you have another check step here at the end where you say, do you agree that we have a good fit?
Gotcha.
And you, and it's, again, it's one of those moments where you shut up and wait for the answer.
Absolutely.
You close your mouth.
Pause is good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If that pause lasts 10 whole seconds and they're looking at you blinking, you keep doing it. because you know, if you're the one that talks first and start babbling on some more because you start getting nervous,
you've lost. Yeah.
So you let them give you that answer. And again, for the most part, the answer is probably going to be yes. Even if they don't actually aren't planning to buy from you, maybe you're still not going to win this business.
Yeah. And we've all been in those presentations too.
Right. At the very least, they have to acknowledge that, yeah, you did it. You did your diligence.
Mm-hmm.
You understand us. Sounds like what you do is a fit for what we're doing here. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
So once that happens, then you move on to the last phase, which we've talked about, this, that action piece where you maybe not ask for the business, but the goal is to create some sort of action plan next. If you are at a point where you can move forward with the business, say, all right, well, hey, we're going to get a presentation together for you, get you some quotes and pricing or something, you know, get a, you know, information over to you about exactly how much this is going to cost and when we can start it. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's something where you're just like, hey, now that we've established this, our next meeting, I want us to get together on this date at this time and talk about, you know, how we can do this in phases, what we can tack on phases. Doesn't mean that they've committed to it. They may not commit to it at all. They may not say like, sure, let's do that. They may say, well, let's look at our calendar and think about this. I'm not available that day, but maybe we can do some other day.
Mm-hmm.
But you've already pigeonholed them into committing, hopefully committing to some next step rather than, again, just saying, all right, I'm done. Let me know if you've got, you know, let me know if you have any questions. Let me know if you're interested. Here's my phone number.
Because
you do that, no, then you've ruined everything you've just done.
Right.
So you have to create some sort of action step there at the end to advance the conversation, whether it's advancing right onto the sale or it's advancing into the next step of this process that's going to get you closer to it.
Gotcha.
So what are your thoughts on TUFA?
Yeah, no, I like it. Who knew? I didn't know what TUFA was walking into this podcast, but I am refreshingly reaffirm that all that I had been doing for 16 whatever years of selling, they actually had a methodology to it. But I'll tell you, it's brilliant. And what I like about it, as you were talking, John, and as I sit back and think about it, this is relative to not just a big sale.
Right.
It's relative to anything, any type of presentation. It could be a presentation of a point of sale system to a very small mom-and-pa retail establishment, or a small manufacturer who you're walking in the door that has limited needs of ADC or mobile device technology. But man, you still want to apply this type of presentation. And it might happen very quickly, right?
Right.
That whole sales cycle might happen actually in one meeting. You know, back in the day when people would actually do door-to-door sales,
you know,
it was everything. It was the cold call, the presentation, the close, and the order all in one thing.
Yep.
But anyway, I think you can apply this TUFA even in a small deal type of an orientation.
Yeah, definitely.
Or even if it's just, you know, a conversation that you're having with the president of a small manufacturer and but applying this, because at the end of the road, what I like about it, and my goal at a presentation was always to make sure that what I'm conveying, I'm going to use your word, fit. I wouldn't have used that word before, but that's a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
It, is what I would I know and what I just presented a good fit? Are we showing a good fit here? Meaning, I mean, I guess I was one of those sales reps that like to have a little bit of feeling into the deal,
right?
I wanted it to feel right. I wanted to make sure that what I was presenting actually was going to work.
Right.
And I didn't want to walk out of the room and be one of those reps like, huh, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I don't know if we can do half the stuff that I just talked about, but, you know, we'll get it figured out. I'm going to reach my goal. I get my quota. I get paid. I'm out the door.
Right.
I wasn't that kind of guy. I wanted to make sure that what we were, it was a good fit, right? That the solution that we were building was actually going to fit for what their needs were. And sometimes I would walk out of a presentation and I'd have to retool. I'd have to retool the solution because of something that was unearthed during the presentation. And that would be the action item coming out of it. The at the end would be, okay, so, you know, I came in understanding this part. I'm pivoting a little bit because of what I've learned today. And so that's the action item. I'm going to go back to the drawing board. I'm going to whatever.
Because it's very possible at that fit point when you do ask about that they tell you like, yes, but and maybe they unveil something either that you just quite didn't get right, or maybe they give you something new that you had no idea they were. You know, I think you mentioned earlier, like where you went in and you were pitching one thing, but found out like, hey, I need something entirely different. Like, great,
which was you came
here to talk about POS, but we actually have a bigger need for digital signage right now. So let's talk about that instead. Yeah. Then fine.
Or inventory tracking.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, great. Okay. So the need has modified a little bit, which is awesome because your company, not the one you're selling, your customer's company is going to benefit from a more holistic solution.
Right.
So that's actually what happened most of the time is what was unearthed was, you know what? Yeah, we kind of thought we needed digital signage that had content that was just this. But now that you've unveiled that we can tap into real-time sources and do these other things, yeah, we kind of need to rethink this a little bit. And so that was maybe some of the action item was, you know, just, okay, now researching, coming up with the right solution.
And maybe you go back in 3 weeks and do another presentation the same way again, but now on a different topic. Or you do like a smaller modified version of it. We're like, hey, last time we were here, we already went through like what we do, what we know.
Yep.
But again, I still want to make sure, do I have this right about you? Here's what we can do for you. Do we have a fit again? You know, like
I love it. I mean, had I known, I would have walked into the door. Them, us, fit, action. That's what we're doing here. Two for them, us, fit, action. It's good. It's good. Can we sidebar on some other things about a presentation?
Yeah, please do. I was going to ask if you had anything else.
What do you think about when you walk into a presentation where you have multiple people from your company in the presentation? And the importance of defining the roles before you walk in the door.
Ooh, that's
so
a good point.
I've been in presentations where, it's mano a mano, or it's just me and however many people on the other side of the desk.
Right.
I'm good with that. You know, I understand that. I can hold my end of the table, if you will. But I've also been in those meetings where I'll have multiple people from the company involved. Now you've got multiple personalities. Who's running the show?
Right.
Who's got the alpha? Who's got the alpha personality?
Right,
it's probably going to be stepping all over. Who's managing that? I think there's a lot of, you know, before we get kind of, whenever I think about presentations, that's one of those things that it's like, ooh, man, know the roles, right? Know who's going to be talking, who's running the show, who's going to be talking about which section.
Yep.
And now that I know TUFA, I mean, I would have been teaching everybody, hey, this is how this is going down, right?
And you could split, let's say you had four people on your team or something, you know, or two or three or whatever.
Yep.
You could split those sections up between them. Or maybe it's a fact of where, like, you're the great sales guy who's good at, like, talking about the overall company and what you can do and what, you know, what you can establish, but you've got someone who's great on the technical side of things and can explain that stuff. So maybe you decide ahead of time, like, look, you're going to talk, when we get to the us section, you're going to talk all about the tech specs. If any questions come up around technology, I'm going to turn to you and let you answer those. But you're right. I think having those clearly defined roles ahead of time, so you don't have a bunch of people stepping all over themselves, or you don't have someone, you know, piping up and saying, well, let me explain that a little bit better, because you're alluding to, like, maybe this person isn't actually explaining it right in this presentation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's important, and maybe just doing some practice runs, you know, like,
oh yeah,
that
if
was something when I
presentation?
These
oh,
presentations
absolutely.
Usually, like, if I had to give one, we almost always were asked to go in front of the manager and do it to them and treat them as if they were the decision maker.
Mm-hmm.
And they would tell you, like, all right, this part's strong, that part's strong. this is the part you probably need to fix a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, run that stuff in front of somebody. If you have the time and the ability,
do
it to someone else.
Even if you're a small reseller, right? Yep. Like if you're a small reseller, you only have 20 people. That's the reseller that was the size of the company that I was working for. We had 20 to 25 employees. We would still do the test. You know, I would go down and say, okay, I want to give you portions of the presentation and see if this makes sense. And not only as a sounding board, but a lot of times I like to hear, what am I saying? Am I saying it correctly? That type of thing. Practicing is a good one. You can do it with your own people.
Yep.
Because believe it or not, some serendipitous moments come out of that too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hey, by the way, while you're talking about this, I was just doing this project with this other customer and you might want to bring that up type of a thing. I'd learn all kinds of little gold nuggets like that.
Oh, yeah.
When I would present in front of our team. You know, or at least little snippets of it before I would walk
in. Or even stuff like, hey, I noticed when you're presenting, you use a lot. Mm-hmm. Or you get twitchy with, mm-hmm. you know, this certain part of your body, or you look impatient or something. That's something to watch out for. Mm-hmm. Never know.
Mm-hmm. I like the tufa, though.
Yeah,
I like it.
Definitely. Anything else you've got? Any other thoughts?
No, we've touched on a lot.
Yeah.
And obviously we could do some more on just sales and stuff like that.
Oh,
it sounds like you and I could bring a little bit of some experience there. But, you know, when you think about value to the VAR, I guess, which is where we're going here next, you know, again, what I like about this is that, you know, it doesn't matter what size reseller you are. And I have a love and an affinity for small to medium size resellers because that's what I was. And I would battle up against the big guys from time to time, too, and loved it when I would kick their butt.
Right.
You know, and because we would out present them. I really do feel like the presentation is a way of differentiating yourselves on so many different levels. It's the interpersonal. It's you being able to get to know, you know, the customer, what's on their mind, what's on their side of the desk, what are they worried about? Yeah, okay, we're here to talk about it, you know, at a high level, some technology or a solution, but what are they really looking for? But also, and I love this about the us part of the tufa. Hey, by the way, I'm a partner in this,
right?
This part of this presentation is not only learning from you, but so that you can learn from me about how I think I'm going to be a good fit.
Right.
Which if you have that mindset walking in that this is a partnership and you're trying to learn a little bit about them and you want them to learn about you, I think the tufa is it's a great way. It does nail it in that sense that it's so critical because that is going to be the foundation for a great relationship moving forward, which ultimately is what you would want to do. Even if you sell commodities, even if it's just, you know, a pen or something like that, there's a reason, there's a reason why there's a relationship there. There's a reason why you need the company you work for needs sales.
Right.
It's because of that relationship. It's because you can bring more value to the table. Just do it.
Yeah.
And this is a pretty good way of doing it.
Yeah, I agree.
Now I look at it.
Well, and you kind of mentioned like the commodities thing. Like, you know, there's still this, I think, perception that people buy based on price and mm-hmm. that's it. Mm-hmm. Like that if you have the lowest price, you're better suited to win the business than anybody else. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think that's where like the giant companies, the big companies maybe go in and think like, hey, we're going to beat everybody else on price because we can, because we're this massive company.
We got volume.
Right. And the small to medium guys think like, well, I have to price higher because that's the only way I can meet my overhead and keep operating. So how else am I going to differentiate? I'm walking in here to lose. So that's the same thing I kind of was thinking here is my value point is this kind of presentation, giving yourself this kind of step above what your competition might be doing is the kind of thing that will set you apart. I know like the company where I learned this from, this food service equipment supplier, we were not the low price company. Mm-hmm. We acknowledged that. We told people that even in our presentations, like, look, we're not going to have the cheapest spoon or food pan for your buffet. Mm-hmm. Remember what buffets were a thing?
Yeah, right.
We're not going to have that. However, we have built this entire methodology around presentation. We understand how food presentation works. We understand how to draw people's attention to want to go eat from a buffet or mm-hmm. make them go buy more or, you know, add on something or whatever. Like that was our goal. And so we mm-hmm. explained that and how using us benefited them in that way mm-hmm. instead of the price point thing.
Yep.
And that was how a lot of times we won business. Yep. Like, yeah, sure, you can go online to this, you know, online only dealer and buy all the cheap stuff you want. But that's still good. At the end of the day, it's going to be your job to go out there and put it out and draw people in. We're going to help you with that part of it too. So I think, you know, that's that differentiator that you mentioned for small to medium 100%. Businesses is the big guys, they go in there expecting to win the business just because of their name,
yep.
their volume,
yep.
their pricing,
yep.
and just... It's what they do. They just, they're going to have that attitude walking in the door. You get to go in and say, look, I understand you. I literally was on your floor last week talking to your people, looking around, seeing the situation that you're in right now, looking at your current equipment. This is what I understand about you. This is what I've researched. And this is why I'm going to be able to help you out, even if it costs you a little bit more than the other guys get off.
But it's genuine, it's authentic, yep. and it's meaningful, and it is a differentiator. I'll just say it again. A presentation is a great way for you to start distinguishing yourself from the competition.
Agreed.
A story that I have is, again, going back to that Christiana Healthcare, we were, and still the company that I used to work for still to this day, is a boutique digital signage shop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what they do. Or one of the things that they do. But in that particular deal, we were going up against one of the heavy hitters. I'm not going to name them. One of the heavy hitters that is still around in digital signage, mm-hmm. and their internal team. So it was their direct team,
right.
That we were up against. So you have this behemoth digital signage company, right? That had the suits that were ironed and pressed and whatever, right. and had the story and had all the resources. And here's this little reseller that had a lot of experience.
Right.
You know, it just happened to be a lot of experience in digital signage and healthcare, and understood, you know, the us, the fit, and here's what we can do. Ended up winning that deal too. But I do believe the presentation was part of the differentiating
right.
part. Yeah.
Well, look at you. You've already been doing this. I'm preaching to the choir here.
Preaching to the choir.
But hopefully our listeners got right? something useful out of this.
Absolutely.
And we want to hear from you if that's the case. If yep. you feel like you have, you know, that you got a great tip you want to share with us, or maybe mm-hmm. some awesome things you've done yourself, you know, again, try this out. If it works, tell us about it. We want to hear.
Yeah.
You can find us, as always, on Twitter, at TechConnectPod. You can email us, TechConnect@BlueStarInc.com.
Mm-hmm.
We want to wrap things up with our favorite segment every week.
Absolutely.
Well, at least it's my favorite segment.
I love it.
What's Tech Connecting with you?
Yep.
Long-time listeners, you know the deal here. We talk about a piece of technology or something cool mm-hmm. or fun that we're playing with, using, reading about, that we found interesting. Dean, as always, I'll let you start. What's Tech Connecting with you?
All right, so you are to blame for this one, my friend. So in a previous podcast, you mentioned that you were listening to a podcast called Newcomers,
yep.
which is around Star Wars, right?
Yep.
And so it's, I forget the ladies' names.
Lauren Lapkus and Nicole Byers.
Thank you. And it is a funny podcast, yep. and they review, it's these two people that had never seen Star Wars before, any Star Wars, and so they're coming into a cold, but had heard of all this stuff. Anyway, not about the podcast, but I started listening to that podcast, and one of the things that they talked about and they get into is CGI versus mm-hmm. live action.
Oh, yeah.
And so what's Tech Connecting with me? You know, I can remember back in the day when CGI came out, and I guess The Phantom Menace was one of those first ones that had a lot of
right.
CGI, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the Jar Jar Bink. And you know, everybody, if
it's
you go
all
back
green
and,
screens.
And if you go back and look at it, it's in today's standards, pretty bad.
Right.
But anyway, at the time, it was like, whoa. And Terminator 2, I remember that movie coming out. Was just revolutionary
oh, yeah.
use of CGI. And to this day, that still holds up.
Yep.
But what's Tech Connecting with me is, man, a love of live action, because what I'm learning on the podcast, and when I think about it, it's so true. The original three Star Wars that came out, you know, there was no CGI. Everything was what they call live in camera, right?
Right?
I mean, yep. the sets were sets. They weren't drawn
models, hand move models. Yeah,
there is a certain beauty to that, and I hope there is someday a renaissance of having that in filmmaking, because so cool. Yes, limiting, but from a user experience, and this is Lauren's, and well, what's the other lady's
Nicole.
Name? Nicole's. Yeah. What their point is that they really love that, and of course, they're in the industry.
Right.
But anyway, they really love that about the early Star Wars.
Right.
And now that they're watching the CGI Star Wars, it's like, yeah, okay, it's okay and all, but you know,
it's a cartoon with some people.
Yeah, but it misses what was so awesome about the early Star Wars. So, what's Tech Connecting with me? Maybe going a little old school, going live action.
Yeah.
As my daughter would say.
I am 100% on board with that, because it has always been one of my talking points about why I love the original trilogy.
Mm.
It didn't and struggled a lot with the prequel trilogy. Mm-hmm. I mean, beyond the fact that, like, you know, I was born and raised in the time when the original trilogy was a thing, and it was the mm-hmm. only Star Wars I knew for 20 years, you mm-hmm. know? But I agree with you. Like, those original special effects, and I'm talking about even the originals, even before he tinkered with them and shoved some CGI stuff in.
Which, right, which I've come to learn they remastered them, yeah, relaunched those of us, them.
He still tinkers.
Who
this
knew
day.
Jabba the Hutt wasn't actually in? Anyway, your eyes are rolling. Go ahead.
Right. I seriously, we could have a whole podcast just me ranting about Star Wars. Marco would join us easily for that, our producer. So. Yeah. But yeah, I completely agree with you. There is something to be said for that. And I will give credit to the newer trilogy, which, you know, has had mixed reception from mm-hmm. fans. Mm-hmm. I personally like most of it for the most part. Mm-hmm. There's some problems with it as well. But they did commit to a lot more of that in-camera effects.
Yep.
Like, there's not as much CGI yep. in those movies. And yep. you can tell it feels... The whole point of Star Wars and why we loved it so much mm-hmm. was it felt like a lived-in universe.
Yes.
That's one of the things
right.
that us fans always point to is, like, the Millennium Falcon didn't look like some pristine starship no. gleaming from the future. It looked like a piece of junk that could fall apart at any yeah. time. That was the joke. That was yeah. the gag.
It looked like a truck that had been down the road quite a few times.
Exactly.
Right?
And there is something to be said for that. And I feel like that is starting to become a thing again. Or if it's not actually a thing that people are doing, at the very least, digital effects are starting to learn how to replicate that much better than before. Where now you get to the point where, like, it looks almost seamless. Like, I'm not catching the digital aspect as much as I used to. But you're right. When that trilogy came out, man, it was so glaringly obvious. And if you go back and look at him now, you're just like, oh, like, this yeah. was, he was trying to do something way sooner than he should have tried to do it.
Revolutionary. I'll give him that. And, you know, change the industry by the use of CGI and whatnot. But I'll just say it again. Hopefully there's a renaissance maybe in filmmaking. Yeah. Anyway, what's Tech Connecting
right, so
with you, my friend?
Like I said, I could keep going about Star Wars forever.
Right. I got to cut you off.
Yeah, my Tech Connect this week. This was actually something I saw in the feed of one of our previous guests, Dr. Christine Perales.
All right.
She posted something on LinkedIn about a MIT had created an autonomous robot for basically doing cleaning in warehouses and distribution centers. And so it could even potentially be used like in schools or other facilities, offices
okay.
as well,
right.
to basically strip coronavirus by using UV technology.
Oh, right.
I think it's
UVC.
UVC.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So now, the catch with UVC is it's very dangerous for people.
Oh.
So you can't have a person out there walking around with a UVC, you know, at least of any kind of magnitude.
But a robot.
But a autonomous robot could. So they actually designed this autonomous robot. It's like a really, it's just like a tall, thin structure with like what looks like, you know, four, you know, like light tubes on mm-hmm. each side or whatever. Mm-hmm. And basically, I think they said they can get through like a 4,000 square foot warehouse within 30 minutes. And just rolls up and down the aisles. It's peppering everything with this UV while everybody's out. You know, mm-hmm. no one's in the in the building at the time. When it's done, basically you've eliminated most of the surface, you know, potential for coronavirus as well as all the aerosolized infection that could be in the air.
Right.
30 minutes time it can sweep over. And I don't know if this is, you know, out for practical use yet mm-hmm. or if, you know, how much of this is going to, you know, actually get out into the world anytime mm-hmm. soon. But that's that kind of innovation where I'm like, man, this is smart people coming up with a very practical, smart application for something that's so in the moment right now.
Yeah,
and even once we're past COVID-19, however long that's going to be,
right?
It's something I don't see any reason why you couldn't potentially use something like this. Because let's be honest, there's infectious crap running around every setup. But imagine like if you could do that in a, you know, a hardware store. I don't know if it's something you'd want to do in a grocery store. I don't know if the effect that could have on, like, you know,
food
or
right.
live produce mm-hmm. or anything, you know.
Right.
But like, just imagine, like, you know, if every facility at the end of the night had one of these robots that just goes and cycles through and basically just kind of cleans everything up for the next shift or for the next day and removes all these
toxins.
Well, now
I got to research. Why is it not good for humans? Is it looking at the light?
I don't know if it's that or if it's just that too much exposure is like too high.
Is it like an X-ray? Like if you get zapped with it, you're okay, but you don't want to sit in front of the lamp.
Probably. It was a CNN article I was reading. They didn't dive too far into that. They just said like it's, you know, it's not healthy. It's one of those things I think overexposure would be bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like you can probably be exposed to a little bit, but too much would be, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
Just head you down a road to disaster.
Well, I like that.
So good, interesting concept.
That's a good one.
Definitely something that Tech connected with me.
Maybe we should be distributing those robots. I don't
know. No doubt.
We'll see.
All right. So that does it for us. It is time for us to unplug. This has been a long conversation, but it's been a good one.
Yes,
I hope everybody got something out of it.
Absolutely.
Again, let us know if you did. We might do more of these. I think you said we could ramble on about sales.
We could. But, you know, and the thing about it is the community, anyway, there's a need for understanding the sales process, what works, what doesn't work, getting validation even for the folks that are listening to this and they're out in the trenches every day. Maybe they're giving presentations. If they were using the TUFA like I was and didn't even realize it, awesome. Now you got some validation that you were doing it the right way.
There you go. You got to give us credit for it. Well, actually, you got to credit the people that I learned it from.
There
too,
you go. You know, there
so
you go.
It's not even mine. Well, all right. That does it for us. As always, for Dean Reverman, I'm John Martin. Everybody, stay connected.
The Tech Connect podcast is brought to you by Elo. Help businesses stay connected with Elo's new Huddle Kit, combining all their collaboration accessories, conference camera, computer module, styluses, and tray into one easy-to-order, purpose-built kit ready to connect with the interactive display for a robust huddle room solution. To learn more, visit Elo's microsite on bluestarinc.com or contact your Blue Star account manager.